Big Blue Insider is on News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com. Get on the show. Call 280-CATS. That's 280-2287. Or toll free at 1-800-606-GAME. That's 1-800-606-4263. Big Blue Insider is brought to you by UK Healthcare. Now, here's Dick Gabriel.
Welcome to the Big Blue Insider. Brand new week. Yours truly over here, over there, Curtis Birch.
And right where you are is you at 280-2287-800-606-4263.
Tweet us at BigBlueInsider1. I will start by telling you Curtis is a little bit upset today over the fact that Jeremy Renick did not make the Hockey Hall of Fame. Nine times an All-Star, Curtis. Nine times.
It's just that classic media bias.
I mean, just because you
don't play the good guy and, you know, try to get on reporters' good side, you don't get into the Hockey Fame and you don't get the respect you deserve.
I mean, they take Timu Selanne, I think I said that right.
Timu Selanne.
On the first ballot. You know, and yes, I know he led the league. You know, he set a record for rookie scoring and you know, won a Stanley Cup with the Ducks and all that stuff. But nine times an All-Star.
Who leads the league in broken noses? That's Roenick.
Yeah. I mean, you know, what do you want? What more can the guy do? Did he not give enough?
He laid it all out on the ice. On the ice, including some teeth, some blood.
I think what you all have to understand is we have no idea who these people are, but we had to come up with something to top the show because, you know, it's not a real newsy day. Is it? Not really. Nothing huge except your boy, Draymond Green.
Wait, what is he?
Once again.
What did he do now?
He's been honored.
How?
He's one of the best. He's a champion, first of all, and now once again is on the NBA's all-defensive first team. So there you see now he's a blue-collar kind of guy. He might be an assassin in your eyes, but he's on the all-defensive team. How about that?
When he's the best defender on the best team, they just give that to you.
Well, just a little bit of bitterness there. A couple of other NBA notes for you because we are still talking about the NBA naturally. Joel Embiid was on the all-rookie team in his third year. Now, figure that out. Well, obviously, he was hurt. He missed the first two seasons of his career because of injuries. And he has proven he is worth the wait. And some people wondered, well, should they hang on to Nerlens Noel? They knew they were going to get rid of one of them. So they kind of took a big, deep breath and sent Nerlens to Dallas, and he'll do well there.
Yeah, he's about to get paid.
Yeah, he really is. But Joel Embiid, NBA all-rookie first team. You know who else made it is future De'Aaron Fox, I guess current teammate, Buddy Hield of Sacramento.
Well, he's the next Steph Curry, according to the Kings.
Well, then De'Aaron Fox is going to have a lot of fun up there. Knicks center Willie, I can't say his name. Have you got that one?
Is it Herman Gonit? Yeah.
Hernan Gomez?
Yes.
All right.
Yep.
And Dario Saric of Milwaukee. There, you know what? That's a good team. No, he's with Philly, rather.
Yeah, Brogdon was with Milwaukee.
Brogdon with Milwaukee.
Who was by far the biggest surprise in rookiedom.
Yeah, he really was. Milwaukee actually is not a bad team. They're just not good enough to make a big splash one way or the other, but, you know. They'll draft a UK player and they'll be on their way at some point. But anyhow, I wanted to make sure you knew that about Draymond. Had you not seen that?
No, I had seen that, but I think I have like a mute on Draymond Green in my feed, so I saw that the
Google alerts for Draymond.
I saw that all of the defensive teams came out, but I had not seen his name.
Yeah, well,
Jamal Murray, if people were wondering, was on the second team All Rookie.
Yep, Draymond led the league in steals with 2.03 per game. So, you know, of course, it doesn't tell you what he had to do to get the basketball
exactly
away from his opponent. You know, it was also obviously on there as Kawhi Leonard. And I always feel vindicated when I see his name or hear his name because when he was – I don't know if he came out after his third year. He was in his last year at San Diego State. And he was the reason San Diego State was a two seed that year, and I picked San Diego State. I don't know if I picked them to make a run to the Final Four. I know I got them to the Elite Eight, and they were beaten early. They were upset. But I did so because of him. I'd read about him. I'd watched him a little bit in the late night games in the conference tournament. And I could not tell you that I thought he would be as good as he is in the league. But he was a darn good college player, I can tell you that. And so, you know, and I saw somebody on Facebook or a message board, you know, blasting me for my choice, just kind of wrote me off as a prognosticator. And it's not like I killed it that year in the contest, but someone dismissed my picks out of hand as soon as he saw that I was talking up Kawhi Leonard. So I wish I saved that. I wish I could have, you know, politely fired one back and say, "And you were saying, sir?" But
he has an awesome new commercial out.
I saw that.
Where it's two guys debating who's better, offensive Kawhi or defensive Kawhi.
Yeah.
And it's this whole build-up thing, and it rolls through all his stats on both sides. And then it wraps up by saying, "Could Kawhi get buckets on Kawhi?" And these two guys just explode. It's a fantastic premise, I think.
And I've seen that on blogs. That's getting a lot of life on blogs. It's very, very popular. But as Curtis said, the first and second teams are out, and no former Wildcats. I beg your pardon, Anthony Davis on the all-defensive second team. And as Curtis said, Jamal Murray on the second team, all rookie team. So anyhow, it's that time of year. They're sort of the awards are dribbling.
Well,
out.
It's the big one.
Get it?
They have the show tonight.
Yeah,
exactly. The NBA decided that they wanted to have their own award show, and I think it's hosted by Drake. So John Calipari might just show up.
By the way, John Wall was the number three vote getter. He would have been on the third team if they voted that many ways. So I think part of the debate tonight is interesting, and you were telling me you saw the same thing. The Houston Rockets have two people up for sixth man of the year. Now explain that to me.
I can't. I think they should have to eliminate one, whoever got off the bench first most often.
How? Yeah, exactly. How can you be? One other NBA note, and we have declared this a LeVar-free zone. It's not a Lonzo-free zone, though, because we have to keep an eye on such things with, you know, De'Aaron Fox playing in the same division, playing on the same coast. They are always going to be linked. And I do predict, though, Curtis, at one point they'll be teammates. It might just be for a few months. It won't be. It'll be farther down the road, but weird things like that happen. It's just one of those things that will happen in the NBA at some point. L.A. Lakers really like their new point guard. And the general manager, this is the guy who was hired after Magic Johnson took over as the head of the team. Rob Pelinka, who's an NBA veteran, but he went a little crazy on the radio today. And in explaining and describing Lonzo Ball's passing ability, did you see the two players that he used to describe him? Neither one of them is a basketball player.
Oh, my gosh. Seriously?
Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers.
And
Tom F. Brady and Aaron F. Rodgers, yes.
And I thought the whole Jason Kidd and Magic saying, "I can see some of it myself in him," was...
That's fine.
That hype train is too much. But this took this... This made it like a super train or something. That was just crazy. That's ridiculous.
The initial Jason Kidd remarks were, "His game is like Jason Kidd's," or whatever. And everybody that I read said, "No, I'm not saying he's the next Jason Kidd." And for Magic to say, "I see some of myself," Magic is allowed to say that for a number of reasons.
He's
Magic.
Well, he's making PR to sell tickets.
B, PR to sell tickets. And three, he has to justify the pick. And you know what? Maybe he does see a little of himself in Lonzo Ball. And I'm going to throw in a wild card. I'm going to give him a pass on this. You know why, Curtis? Because I've interviewed Magic Johnson twice. So that means we're boys. But come on now. Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, he said he has this transcendent gift to see the floor and pass and put the ball on a dime like Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, and quarterbacks come to mind. You can just see a gift that they do things other players can't do. Well, sure, but do you have to go there? I mean, why not go to Jason Kidd or Magic Johnson? Maybe it's because he can't be held accountable this way. "You said he's as good as Magic." No, I said he's as good as Tom Brady. And even Tom Brady throws interceptions, right?
Yeah.
All right. One other thing before we get to our first break. Next time you tell me you're going to take a spin through Rupp Arena, should I take you literally? Because somebody took a spin through Mizzou Arena yesterday morning, through Mizzou Arena. A former employee, was that right?
Well, I think he was kind of like an intern event management position, so he's former now, if he wasn't. But it was a Volkswagen Passat stormed through a gate that was outside Mizzou Arena and went all the way into Norman Stewart Court and was on the court.
Bumped into multiple golf carts before he got on the floor.
I still don't understand completely. I'm guessing the Mizzou Arena is something like Rupp Arena where...
It's not nearly as big.
Well, not in a big sense, but, yeah. it has multiple purposes. And, you can navigate through stuff because if Rupp Arena is set up for a basketball game, the only way you're getting a car onto the court is if you just drive down some seats. This guy apparently, drove in some way and broke a gate, hit golf carts. He turned himself in, luckily, and no one was hurt. But an estimated $100,000 worth of damage.
In March, former student who graduated in December 2016, hired as an events assistant within the school's athletics department for the SEC Network, which I guess means he was a runner or a gopher. Not entirely sure why he thought this was a good career move, but it says here that the Tigers basketball team practiced on the court this afternoon despite the skid marks. How about that?
And that'll tie in nicely with our NASCAR coverage later.
Mark Simmendinger of Kentucky. I didn't even think about that. Of Kentucky Speedway is going to be with us second hour.
Listen,
I can't wait to ask him about it.
There's got to be a NASCAR race that's trying to get some promotion. You see the sponsorships on these courts all the time. They ought to dovetail off this and have a court with fake tire tracks on it and put it in one of those tournaments and sponsor it.
Sounds good to me. 280-228-7800-606-4263. Tweet us at Big Blue Insider 1. When we come back, if your ears were burning, well, that's because you're a Kentucky fan, and UK basketball was the topic many times today on the SEC teleconference. Every coach, a couple of assistant coaches sat in for the head coaches, but John Calipari made an appearance today. They actually moved him from last to first for some reason. Obviously, he has scheduling issues, but a hot topic once again was the one and done, and obviously so many of the coaches who answered the question, and there was a mixed bag on the answers, but almost all of them referred to Kentucky and the success that John Calipari has had working around that very rule. We're back in just a minute. Talk more about that. Bottom of the hour, Kyle Tucker of SEC Country will join us here on 630 WLAP. Welcome back to the Big Blue Insider. Dick Gabriel, Curtis Birch. We mentioned earlier, tonight is the NBA Awards show. It's the very first one, just another way to squeeze a little more attention out of the NBA season. But if you're a Kentucky fan, and I've got to think most of you listening are, you have maybe a passing interest, if not more, in the fact that three former Kentucky players are up for awards. Devin Booker for Performance of the Year when he went for 70. Tyler Ulis is up as well, and so is John Wall. John Wall is nominated for his performance in the postseason. Ulis nominated for his game-winning shot against Boston, and this was after Eric Bledsoe, former Wildcat, had tied the game with 4 seconds left, and then Ulis got the ball, picked up a loose ball, knocked in a jumper at the buzzer, and the Suns get the win. So, a little bit of interest there. But, of course, of the three players, one of them stayed for 2 years. Two of them were one and dones, Devin Booker and John Wall. And as we mentioned, that was a topic of conversation today on the teleconference. One of the writers obviously was doing a piece on the one and dones. I believe it's Jerry Tipton. And just about everybody got a chance to weigh in. John Calipari talked about it as well. And by the way, Steve Moss texted me. He said Calipari had to catch his flight to Egypt with the under-19, so that's why he asked if they could move him up to the top of the order.
Yeah, he came on at 9:53.
Yep.
which I just thought was funny. And he went well over his allotted time.
That's
anyway, it was he Calipari today had a solution for coaches that are complaining about one-and-done players.
It's a coach's choice to recruit these kind of kids. Don't recruit them. Just don't recruit them. I want four-year guys. Then recruit four-year guys. I don't understand what the issue is. And I would say this. If you're old school and you've been following college basketball and you liked it as kids staying in school 4 years and all that, then you probably say this has ruined what my game used to look like. Well, you know, the world has changed. It's changed in the NBA. It's changed in Europe. The game has changed. The world has changed.
So you old people just got to get over it and just accept the changing of the world.
Well, he's right about that, but I think it's a little disingenuous just to dismiss them by saying, well, recruit four-year guys. Well, if you do that, he knows that if you do that, you're not going to win consistently at the highest levels because the best players are going to be 1 or 2 year guys, and nothing against 4 year guys. You need them in your program. But if you purposely avoid the best, now look, if you're in a position, if you're at a school that isn't going to have a shot, if you're at, with all due respect, let's say North Carolina Wilmington or, you know, or someplace like that, they're, oh, you know, in Eastern Kentucky or whatever, which might,
a Washington, an LSU.
Into, yeah, right. That you know, you're going to need to build with you know, maybe you've got someone that's going to leave after 3 years. That can happen. But you know as well as I, you're talking about the cream of the cream. And so just to say, well, just don't worry about it then. Come on now. But I didn't hear many people complaining about that today. Did you? I mean, it just, they know this is the nature of the game.
No, and most of it stemmed from, I guess, Coach Mike Krzyzewski said something that he prefers the baseball rule, and that kind of seemed the jumping off point for this question as a whole. I heard Frank Martin's comments, and he was kind of the same thing. Yeah, that sounds great, but I think all of them were agreeing on one thing they wanted to make perfectly clear. This isn't the NCAA's rule. This is the NBA's rule.
That's right.
They always got to throw that out there, and I can't blame them at all because that kind of narrative has been falsely advertised. This isn't something that college basketball wants. This is something the NBA put forward.
I think people are slowly coming around to that. However, for some reason, you've got the haters out there who, for some reason, they hold Calipari, they still hold him responsible for it. When he is the one guy who has consistently done well with the one and done. And I'm glad you mentioned LSU and Washington. Because what Curtis obviously is referring to there are two programs which landed two of the best players in the world, and they were one and dones. And not only did they not succeed, what they succeeded at doing is getting their coaches fired.
Yep.
And one coach, I thought he would have been fired. I thought Johnny Jones was going to get fired anyway at LSU. I was surprised that Romar got fired at Washington. But things had slipped quite a bit. He had been doing well, and obviously when you land a guy like that, the expectations are off the charts. Imagine now, expectations are off the charts if you land one of those guys. If you're at Kentucky and you're Calipari and you land four of them. Yeah. But on the other hand, that gives you four of them. So, you know, you've got a real shot there.
And the other,
but you got to get them to play together.
And those guys were the number one overall pick, Fultz and Simmons. And now this year, you're kind of in a similar boat with Missouri.
Yep.
I mean, they're probably right now a bubble team, if you want to go with Joe Lunardi's bracketology. But
Wouldn't you?
Yeah. I don't know what else we have to go off of, to be honest. I mean, they're going to be super young. So
Would you, without Joe Lunardi, wouldn't you call them right now a bubble
team? Yeah, because they're going to be super young and there's a ton of turnover.
And that's a pretty broad term.
But it would be really insane if three straight number one picks didn't go to the NCAA tournament.
Would be fascinating.
And they all went to college. It would be one thing if there was like a great, you know, movement to go to Europe and make some money over there, and then, or, you know, a couple international guys. But these guys would be three straight guys, went to college, one and done, and none of them made the NCAA tournament.
How about that? That would be interesting, and it's going to unfold right in front of us with Missouri being in the Southeastern Conference. We'll talk about this and other topics with Kyle Tucker of SEC Country. That's coming up next. It's the Big Blue Insider here on 630 WLAP. We're going to find out if there's any relation, because John Short's going to want to know. Right? I'm amazed he hasn't asked this yet. Kyle, I feel the need to ask you this. Are you related at all to Tanya Tucker?
I don't think so, but I mean, you know, Tennessee. Tucker's from Tennessee. It could be somewhere down the line. I haven't done the lineage.
Haven't done the ancestry.com. Yeah, well, we'll tell John Short that at least we tried to find out. I think we should get – Curtis gets credit for trying to figure that out. Kyle Tucker, a longtime friend of the show, secountry.com. Proud Pop, how are the Twins doing? Give us an update real quick.
They're great. Tomorrow is their 4 month. They'll be 4 months old tomorrow, going in for their 4 month checkup. So
wow,
big stuff. They're lifting their heads and rolling over, and they can almost sit up on their own. So everybody, I'm sure, is excited to learn these rudimentary baby developments.
Look, man, they're going to be crawling soon, and you and the wife are going to be double teamed. So that's
yeah, I'm worried about that.
Well, you should be, but we all go through it. But it's going to be fun. You're going to love it. You already do. I know. You have been traveling a lot. You were out there watching the All-Stars, and if they call it that. And now Calipari and his team took off. Tell me a little bit about the future, the immediate future of UK basketball.
I think it looks really good. You know, as Calipari said on his teleconference today, what I saw and what he saw, a lot of wows from Kevin Knox. He's really, really impressive. You know, 6'8", 6'9", guy who can do everything, handle the ball, shoot the ball, drive, post up, rebound. I mean, he really is, you know, positionless. He's that guy. Calipari talks about that. P.J. Washington, the same deal. I mean, he really opened my eyes with the stuff he can do away from the basket. He can handle it. He can shoot it. And then Hamidou Diallo, you know, none of us really knew. Could he play? And he can. I mean, he still got some work to do on that jump shot, but it is improving. And I would say, I made the argument yesterday, and somebody from Michigan State argued Miles Bridges is the better athlete. But I think no one in college basketball next year will be a better athlete than Hamidou Diallo. And he can play basketball. You know, it wasn't just running and jumping. He looked like a really good college basketball player out there, and at times the best player on the floor. Overall, before he got hurt, I thought Knox was the best player in camp. But yeah. Hamidou Diallo had his moments, including one of the last scrimmage before they made the roster, where he was just kind of unstoppable.
I saw that discussion on Twitter about Bridges versus Diallo. That's going to be a lot of fun this coming season to really check that out. And the one thing that struck me, Kyle, is reading your stuff and seeing, you know, your colleagues are out there and they're shooting video and posting things. And you guys reminded me of baseball scouts who are cross-checkers. You know what I mean? Like, I think this about this guy. What do you think about him? Tell me if you're seeing the same thing I have. And you're not working together on it, but to somebody like me who's reading it all, taking it all in, I was seeing the similar opinions from all you guys. It must have been a lot of fun to sort of break that down.
Yeah, it was. I mean, we're sitting there talking about it. Me and Fletcher Page from the Courier Journal and Ben Roberts from the Herald Leader, we're all friends with each other, obviously competitors, but also friends. So we talk a lot and hang out on these kind of trips. Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News was there. Luke Wynn, another friend of mine, who I respect a lot from Sports Illustrated. And it was fun to just kind of sit there on our little row. It's just that half a dozen reporters total in that gym, watching some really high-level guys, sharing opinions. You know, for the most part, I think we're almost all on the same page on most of the guys. And it was a unique opportunity. You know, Cal there, the three cats, six five-star recruits. There's a chance to see a lot of good stuff.
You know, you posted video of Diallo with that follow slam that was just really, really impressive. But what got me about it was he slammed it and turned around and ran back to the other end of the floor. Whereas you and I know if that had happened in a game, the roof would have come off Rupp Arena. He would have done a little pose for the camera and then gone. So it's a little
Speaking
bit different
of
out
gone,
there.
We've just lost Kyle.
Oh, we just lost Kyle. All right, well, we'll get him back. He was someplace. I heard something in the background.
I think he tweeted out that he was going down to Atlanta for a very important SEC Country Meeting because they're headquartered down there. So,
all right, well,
I'm efforting right now.
We will effort to get him back. Well, that was my question to him, and I'll put that to him though. But like I said, they have some people watching, obviously, mostly media and coaches and things like that. But Diallo, just phenomenal, phenomenal play. And if you don't follow Kyle, you should, because he does shoot a lot of video, things like that. But like I said, it was an errant shot. And you've seen it before. He grabs it with one hand and throws it back down all in one move. Somebody failed to block out. But I kept waiting for the crowd to erupt, you know. And I watched it three times. And all he did was head back for the other end. Like he'd done it before, like he was going to do it again.
Well, when you're super athletic like me and Hami, you know, just get used to those things.
But when you did it, though, in high school, I mean, you waited for the crowd. You heard the crowd a little bit. And now you probably didn't pose much because were there TV cameras on you back then?
No.
Did they have
no.
TV
I mean,
back then?
Well, there wasn't,
they shot slides.
Not everyone had the cell phone cameras. Yeah. Weren't as prevalent.
Birch goes for 37, slides at 11. Was that it?
Yeah, that's how it worked out. Yeah. They were all still photos in black and white.
Yeah. Well, you know, hey, black and white can be artistic, just like your game.
Well, I mean, they have the filters on Instagram for a reason, I think.
You see a lot of that. It's like people have invented black and white. Obviously, we're stalling because we're trying to get Kyle back on the line. But, you know, I'm surprised we don't see more of those sepia-tone photos. You know, we were talking about one and dones, and you've probably seen this. I am so far behind on my 30 for 30s and SEC stories. But last night, I watched the Johnny Newman SEC story, and if you haven't seen that, it's really well done. And again, I'm a documentary buff. I've made a few myself. And again, the team is out there. If you haven't purchased your DVD, please do so. Go to CameronMillsRadio.com. It's interesting. It was narrated by Luke Perry, who is a Memphis guy, but it was carried for the most part by comments from teammates and media people and things like that. And I did not know that Woody Page, who some of you may see if you watch Around the Horn, and he's a very popular writer in Denver, but he spent 4 or 5 years in Memphis, and they had an interview with George Lapidus. And if you watched the documentary, he was the the gentleman on oxygen, had the oxygen tank hooked up, and George has since passed. But Johnny Newman, if you're not aware, he was the next quote-unquote Pete Maravich, and he really was. Now, he wasn't as flashy, and he didn't shoot, with the unlimited range of a Pete Maravich because he went inside more. He was 6'6", a little bit bigger than Pete Maravich, and probably had better players around him, maybe. But at any rate, Johnny Newman, like Pete Maravich, was the team. Unlike Pete Maravich, he was not popular with his teammates.
Oh.
Now, if you watch, there was a shot of Pete Maravich in that documentary, and they show the Tigers carrying him off the floor at one point. And I do not know why. I don't know which game. Johnny Newman told his teammates, just rebound the ball and give it to me, and I'm going to shoot. And the coach wanted that to happen. That was the game plan. So it was interesting that they flat out said, you know, he wasn't very popular, didn't have many friends. Johnny Newman was Johnny's best friend. And long story short, he left after 1 year. He went hardship, quote unquote, but he truly needed to go. And I wasn't aware of this. I knew he had family issues, but his father suffered a stroke late in the season. And he said his father always came back to the locker room after games, and he did not on this one particular night. Well, during the game, a stroke or heart attack, one of the two, he had suffered a heart attack, and they had taken him to the hospital. And so at one point, and I guess it was great timing and they took advantage, but representatives of the Memphis team from the old ABA, the Memphis Pros, they had been the New Orleans Buccaneers, one of my all-time favorite pro sports names.
Such a creative name, Memphis Pros.
The Pros, I know. They went from being the New Orleans Buccaneers, which, again, was one of the greatest names in the hit-fitting.
Yeah, and the Pirate.
Perfect.
The because when I visited my sister down there, they got like little pirate things that, I mean, there's real history, of course. It's fun.
Then they go to the pro. You know, it got worse in Memphis after that. And a lot of you, some of you know this. The team became the Tams. Why? T for Tennessee, A for Arkansas, M for Mississippi, the tri-state area there. Anyhow, with two games left in the season, he dropped out and signed to play in the ABA. And it just never worked. He wouldn't work hard. He wouldn't get in shape. He, you know, he scored a lot of points. And again, wasn't popular with his teammates. Played for five different ABA teams. And when the merger happened and guys were actually auditioning in the last season of the ABA, they knew it. You know, look, guys like Artis Gilmore, Dan Issa, Louis Dampier, guys like, they knew they had jobs. There were a lot of guys who did not know if they had jobs. Johnny Newman, I don't know that I knew this, wound up with the Lakers at one point. He played for three or four other NBA teams. But one team toward the end, I think he was with at the end of the ABA days, the Kentucky Colonels. I did not know that. I had to completely, if I knew, I had completely forgotten, because I used to go to a lot of Colonels games. Now, that probably happened if it was the last year I was in college, so I wasn't paying as much attention to the Colonels as I was the UK team I was covering. But it was terrific. And the reason I bring it up is because this is the guy, and by his own admission, did everything wrong. A one-and-done who cared only about himself. Now, the biggest problem with him was, and they knew he was from Memphis, or he played his high school ball. He finished it up in Memphis. And his college coach knew that he was like this and also knew that he was a great, great talent. So the college coach enabled him, something John Calipari doesn't do. Do not know if Johnny Jones did it. Do not know if Lorenzo Romar did it at Washington.
You know, you mentioned your Kentucky Colonels from back in your day. Did you see the NBA draft ratings that came out?
I know they were pretty good.
I meant from a market standpoint, the number one market was Louisville.
Louisville is the greatest TV sports market in America because of the presence of UK fans, UofL fans, and to a degree, Indiana fans. It's not surprising at all. I guess I should have gotten that, even though I wouldn't think of it as an NBA city or as an NBA market for television. But the ratings number, especially the UK UofL game. Mm-hmm. Oh my God!
Well, so should we start the camp? Oh, actually, there are already
Rick
campaigns.
Rick Bozich is way ahead of you, brother.
So, I mean, should we just basically take this to Silver, Adam Silver, and, you know, pin it to his door so he gets this done?
You know what's funny about that is there was a sound bite from an archive about the Kentucky Colonels with Johnny Newman going to the Colonels, and it was an old news clip, and it said, it was a guy doing a story about how the Colonels were breaking up, and it said, Louisville, Kentucky is the smallest market in all of professional sports. Actually, you might have said professional basketball, because Green Bay is always going to be the smallest.
Yeah.
So I don't know where that would put. Let's say Louisville suddenly landed a team. It's a million plus. It would be pretty small by comparison.
I'm sure they're smaller.
How big is Sacramento?
It can't be humongous.
Yeah, we'll find
out. But I just think the push will be when Seattle's going to get an expansion team eventually, just because Seattle has so much history and there's going to be, you know, money. People like money.
Yeah.
And if teams are worth like $1 billion.
I think they owe them that too.
Yeah. That's why I think that they'll be the one that get it. And if you can, you know, make your league in theory worth $1 billion more by adding a team, they're going to add. Well, they have to add two, you know, to keep things balanced. And if you're going to go to Seattle and you need another market, I don't know. I think Louisville could make it happen.
Have to work it out with the Yum Center, but it's worth a shot. We'll take a break, come back. We're going to try to reestablish with Kyle Tucker. If not, we've got comments from John Calipari and you here on 630 WLAP.
Hello, hello, baby. Hello. You called, I can't hear a thing. I have got no service in the club, you say,
Hello.
What did you say? Oh, you're breaking up on me. Sorry,
Hello.
I cannot hear you. I'm kind of busy.
Hello. Hello.
Just a second. It's my favorite song they're gonna play.
Curtis having a little bit of fun, a little radio fun today.
Well,
John Calipari had a little bit of trouble.
Listen, he's got a lot going on right now in his life, professionally, personally. I mean, it's not a secret. All the Calipari family put out tweets about the old, I believe she's the oldest daughter, getting married this weekend. And he was obviously there. The wedding was yesterday. And he, of course, has the U19 stuff going on. Apparently,
even for Egypt now.
Yeah, apparently he's going to Egypt. So anyway, he was, as you mentioned at the start of the show, he had to move his time on the teleconference up. And I think he just had a lot going on in his mind, and it got off kind of to an awkward start this morning.
It did. Not the great. Just maybe Kyle Tucker was standing right next to him, because not the best connection earlier today from John Calipari.
And I have. Here's just what happened.
Coach, while we wait on questions, can you give us a brief comment on the team looking ahead of next season?
Where do we go in? Yeah, they got scum. Because you're scum. Hello.
Coach, can you give us some quick comments on your team coming up this season?
On my team coming up this season? Or the team I'm now coaching? Which one are we talking, Eric?
Let's talk Kentucky.
All right, that's even better.
Wow.
He doesn't know which
that's
team.
That's the roughest start to one of these I have ever heard.
He didn't know which team to talk about.
Hello.
He didn't realize that the teleconference had started.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's
pulled in a lot of different directions.
As I mentioned, he's got a lot going on. I can't blame him.
Look, just say one of his daughters was married this weekend. That's the free pass.
That's the
hall pass right there. You know, not only a family wedding, but when one of your daughters is married off, that's a freebie. All right, John, with that, we bring you in. You didn't know what was going on there, John, did you?
No, I didn't.
Well, you're up now, brother, and we checked for you. I don't know if you've been listening. I know you have, but Kyle Tucker does not believe he is related to Tanya Tucker.
He doesn't believe? Okay.
Just in case you were wondering.
That'd be something if they were.
We wanted to set your mind at ease.
Oh, no, that'd be something if they were related.
Hey, man, make a family reunions a lot more fun, wouldn't it?
Yeah, because the best song Tanya Tucker had out was, her first song she had out was Delta Dawn.
That's right. What was she, 16?
She was 13, just about, almost 14.
14, wow. Now, was Lori Morgan, I'm going someplace with this, was Lori Morgan married, was it to Keith Whitley?
Yes.
He was related to a guy who worked with us at Channel 27.
Who was that?
One of our cameramen.
Okie dokie.
He now works around NASCAR. So, you know, John, you were probably 3 degrees of separation from Nashville, from the biggest names in country music.
That's right. I'm talking about Morgan. I'm kin to John Hunt Morgan.
You say she is, or you want
to? I am.
You are?
Yeah, I'm kin to General John Hunt Morgan, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I also kin to George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and Robert E. Lee.
You are?
Yep.
John, you're royalty.
And also kin to Queen Elizabeth.
John? You're absolutely royalty now.
Yeah.
How do you know that? Who told you this?
Mom told me this.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's incredible. I'd love to see your family tree sometime.
That'd be good.
I gotta get like a royal theme music.
Next time, John.
When John comes on the phone.
Next time, you're going to have your own theme coming in.
Okie dokie.
All right, John.
And also, Calipari's going to be undefeated on his 19-under thing. I think he'll be undefeated. I know he will.
Probably will. But they're playing tough teams now.
Yep. And how's Cameron Knox's hamstring coming along? How's his hamstring coming along?
I said he's going to be fine. He'll be all right. He'll be ready. He'll be ready to please you, John.
Okie dokie.
All right. Wow. I hope that's true. I think that would be so cool. Did he say George Washington?
Yes.
And who?
And Queen Elizabeth.
Did he say Thomas Jefferson?
I don't
know if that's even possible. I thought Thomas Jefferson and George Washington did not get along.
Yeah, but that makes the potential romance of their following generations more likely because
you think they'd get along if they were at least related.
Well, no, what I'm saying is they probably
squabbled.
Their kids or grandkids became related because that's the forbidden love.
Gotcha.
I mean, Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, I see where you're going.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I have a hard time keeping up with you, as you well know, but I'll catch up. John, this is for you. Hour number two is next. More John Calipari comments. 630 WLAP.
Here today to take you to his mansion in the sky.
Hello.
She's 41 and her daddy's still.
Thank you for listening to Big Blue Insider. I'm Curtis Birch. You can follow me on Twitter at Curtis Birch, B-U-R-C-H. Be sure to follow at Big Blue Insider 1. Like the Facebook page, just search Big Blue Insider and check out our website, BigBlueInsider.com. Also, subscribe on iTunes and give us a rating. Thanks again for listening.
Welcome back to the show. Hour number two of our program. Dick Gabriel, Curtis Birch, and you. 280-2287. Tweet us at Big Blue Insider 1. We were talking in hour number one about the NBA and the draft and things like that. And our buddy Rob, who is up in Detroit now, and I've known Rob forever, Rob Ellis, said, here in Detroit, trying to become a Pistons fan, then they draft Luke Kennard. The struggle is real. Curtis, certainly you can relate to that.
Well, they got Derek Willis, though, as well for their summer team.
Yeah, but most people don't hook their rooting interest to the summer league team, but I guess if that's all Rob has, he's just gonna have to hang with it and hope he makes the squad.
You're grasping at straws, so
that's right. I do want to make a note before we move on. We've got more comments from John Calipari. We're going to talk more about the SEC teleconference, but Freddie Maggard dropped this tweet on onto the feed earlier. I guess it was Saturday, Friday. That was the date of the Kentucky NFL Hall of Fame dinner. That's a nice event. I was over in Louisville this year, and I think Freddie went over because some of his former teammates were there. And evidently, Marty Moore was introduced at one point. And whoever introduced him with a joke about the Peach Bowl. And I'm sure Marty took it with good humor. I mean, he always has. He still hears about it. And when you're put together like Marty Moore, and I don't mean physically, I mean mentally and emotionally, you can handle that. It still can't be easy. But Freddie took offense to that. They were teammates at one point. And as Freddie tweeted, Marty Moore had more than 300 tackles, UK Hall of Famer, played 8 years in the NFL, won a Super Bowl, and I will add, played in two Super Bowls, or was a part of two Super Bowl teams at any rate. And as he put it, introducing him with a Peach Bowl joke was not funny. And I chimed in with, that's low rent. I will point out for the record that 11 years ago on these very airwaves in this very radio station, Marty and I had an exorcism about that game. Why? Because Kentucky beat Clemson in the Music City Bowl. Remember? That was the team the Wildcats upset in 06, the first bowl victory under Rich Brooks. The next year they beat Florida State, but that year they beat Clemson. And again, it was an upset. So we pulled out, I pulled out, the radio clip from that game of the fumble, but I also pulled out clips, all kinds of clips, because there were a lot of great plays. That was a really fun football game to watch. Not if you're a Clemson fan, because your team gave up a touchdown bomb, a catch and run just before halftime. And from that point on, you still had a shot at one point in the game, but you weren't going to win. It was going to be Kentucky's day. And the Wildcat, the Big Blue Nation, owned that stadium. Absolutely owned it. So that was a fun game to cover. And of course, it was history because it was the first bowl victory in a while. But Marty and I sat here, and Marty had nothing to do with it except he was my guest. But when I told him what I wanted to do, he thought that was funny, and he thought it was fun. So we played the highlights from the game. Then we played the clip from the fumble game. But we didn't play the whole clip. At the proper time, we hit the sound effects and blew it to smithereens. And I promised Marty that it would not be mentioned again, at least not on my show. And it had not been until now. So anyhow, I realize I sound a bit parochial when I'm talking like that. It happened. It was part of the game. It was part of history. But, I've gotten to know Marty and gotten friendly with him through the years. And I do feel bad if people still rub that in on him because he doesn't deserve it. Anyhow, there's enough football talk. And chime right in if you like. But I said we would talk about basketball as well. SEC Summer Teleconference. And basically, every coach was asked just to describe what's going on with their team. And what did they all say, Curtis? Well, we're just about done with our summer workouts and everything's going great. Everybody's doing great, right? Some of these teams, though, it's their turn to go. It's the fourth year they get to go to Europe. And how many teams, two or three, said they were going to Europe, which should help, right?
Yeah, and I think there was one.
More than one.
That was, I thought there was one.
Alabama and, gosh, there was one other. Anyway.
Well, I thought they were going, I was going to say I thought they were going to the Caribbean or one of those. But maybe
Alabama's going to France and Italy, I think Avery Johnson said. Yeah, and then somebody else is going to the Caribbean.
But Calipari was asked that question, and after we played you that clip last segment about him not knowing which team he was supposed to be talking about on this particular teleconference, if it was Team USA or his Kentucky team, once he was informed that he was supposed to talk about his Kentucky team, he had things you'd probably heard before, but he's excited about them.
You know, we're going to be really young. Really, really the most inexperienced team that I've coached. So, you know, that's going to be an issue to deal with. But, you know, I love the length. I love the group of guys. I love that they all want to win. When you talk to them, that's what they talk about. And so, you know, it's always fun to work with a group like that. And that is fun. And so I'm looking forward to it. And, you know, we'll see. I still don't know how we're going to play. I would imagine we'll be fast and disruptive, but I don't, you know, how we'll do that, I have no idea.
Per usual. he doesn't know.
Look, he might not know till February.
Well, I mean, you and I were joking before the show. Last year, he thought his team was going to be great defensively when he was talking at this time. That didn't work out so well until very, very much later in the season when they
but
got.
May I interject here that I talked with Mike Pratt on our telecast of the Children's Charity Golf Tournament Saturday, and he said it again. He said he really, really likes the upcoming team. He likes the roster, he said, but it's going to be a February-March team. And, Curtis, how many times did he tell us that last year on the radio? We had him on once every, what, 3 weeks or so?
Yeah.
And until late February-March, he kept saying it's a February-March team, and he was right. And it was a really good February-March team.
Yeah. I mean, they really hit their stride after Fox came back from that, those lingering injuries. And
that's right.
I think he was sick
and
as well.
That's yeah. right. So, look, a little bit of luck. A little bit of coaching.
Can I? I'm just going to throw this out there.
Please.
And then if it happens, I'm going to take complete credit for it. With briefly what we heard from Kyle about the position list, and I heard reports of someone saying PJ Washington could play guard, even though, you know, he's listed as a power forward and everything. Will the UK media guide just not have positions listed?
That's an interesting question.
I think that would be like a genius marketing move.
I was about to say that would be almost a typical Calipari marketing
because,
move, wouldn't it?
I mean, in all honesty, though, like this, we joke about it a lot, but this team particularly kind of fits that bill so well. If you're looking at, I'm specifically looking at Knox, Vanderbilt, and Washington. Those three guys really don't come close to having a specific position. And with Hamidou Diallo now, you know, kind of toying with the notion of being what Calipari calls a lead guard, since, as he also mentions, the Golden State Warriors don't have a traditional point guard. I mean, so neither, you wouldn't have, there would be guards in theory, I guess. But if you just wiped out the position column in the roster, I think it would be hilarious. And I think, like, everyone would, it would, I bet you anything, it would be on, you know, some of the national talk shows, because it would be just something Calipari, you know, just trying to, you know, headlines during the summer whenever the media guide would come out.
And what would the subtitle be on that on that story? Attention recruits.
Yeah, exactly. So I think
if you're 7 feet tall, you can think of yourself as a guard. We might not play you there.
Exactly. And he said that to Anthony Davis and all those guys as well. Yeah. So,
but you know what? How great was it? Who was it he was yelling at the tryouts? Something like, we shoot the ball. You know, he yelled at somebody for not shooting.
Was it Bol Bol?
Might have been Bol Bol. And it reminded me of, and I'll use the word, Patino, when he was here, and yelled at Jamel Martinez, and he yelled at him during a game, so there was a big crowd at Rupp Arena, but there was sort of a lull in the crowd, and of course he was loud enough to be heard, and he screamed at Jamel Martinez something to the effect that if you don't take that shot, you're coming out. Now, what I hated about that relationship was that somewhere down the road, he said this about Jamel Martinez: we wouldn't have recruited him if we hadn't been on probation.
Ooh.
Yeah. I'm like, really? Really?
You don't have to say that.
I mean,
that.
This guy is going through the living hell that is playing for Rick Pitino with all that goes with it, physically and mentally, and he played his butt off. No, he was not a superstar player, but he was tough. He was gritty. He fit that style. And you got to say that crap publicly? Come on now.
Some more comments from Calipari. We were talking about that U19 camp and Kevin Knox going home and how good he looked. He was asked about Kevin Knox, but he also spoke about all the Kentucky players at that camp.
Yeah, Kevin was terrific. Kevin, he was the best player, one of the best. He was there were three or four guys that stood out, and he was one of them. There were times where I just shook my head and said, wow. And Kevin, again, PJ is playing really well. Hami, I'm really excited. I wish Kevin would have made the trip, but you look at it and say, it's not worth it. Just go back. You get yourself healthy. But what's going to happen is with Hami and PJ, I get a chance to be with them for 3 weeks, and they get a chance to be with me. I get a chance to watch them closely, to learn more about them so I can do a better job of coaching them. And then they know what my expectations are, and it's going to be a little bit easier road. But again, the 3 or 4 days I spent with Kevin were great, and he's going to be terrific. Boy, he is really good.
I mean, that's kind of a ringing endorsement if you make John Calipari say wow.
Well, not only that, I think most importantly of all, John Calipari just confirmed what Kyle Tucker said. It's usually the other way around.
Yeah.
I like the fact that it was Calipari confirming what Kyle said. That's important.
Well, and I think this is going to be kind of like one of those intense leadership weekends the corporations love to have. You know what I'm talking about when they like have the executive meetings?
Yeah.
That's going to kind of be them. I think Washington is going to have to, I don't think he's going to have much of a choice but to step up in a leadership role, because he's going to have this intense training with Calipari in this Egyptian trip.
Yep.
So I think, you know, with a lack of experience, you're going to have to lean on a guy who has the most experience with the coach. And from the freshman standpoint, the new guys on campus, it'll be P.J. Washington.
They really don't have anybody else, do they?
Well, no, because, I mean, you got Diallo, who was there half a semester, and then you'll have Kalea Jones and Winion Gabriel, and that's really your only returners that are scholarship guys.
You need leadership in your backcourt.
Yeah.
You got to have it.
Yeah, so I think this is going to be as you mentioned, you know, it's a big advantage for them, and it's kind of similar to all the other SEC guys talking about going on these foreign trips with their whole team.
Yep.
Calipari's going to do it with two guys, and I think he's probably going to kind of mold them into captains and leadership. I want to play this last clip This was the most interesting one, because Calipari often jokes about how he's never been wrong except for one time in 1984 or whatever, this, that, and the other. He actually today admitted that he disagreed with something the NCAA did, but then it turned out right, and he gave the NCAA credit, which he rarely does.
Back in the day when they started raising these standards, and I was like, boy, I don't know if this is good, because I think we're going to lock out a whole group of kids. Well, what the NCAA did was challenge kids to do well. If you really want to do this and go to college and have a gap year and prepare, or maybe stay in school 2 or 3 or 4 years, you got to get you up to these standards. Well, I thought it would shut people out. Very rarely do I speak highly of the NCAA, but in this case, what it did was it challenged a generation of kids to do better academically, to be on point, to get themselves where they need to go. The NCAA this year reported we had the highest graduation rate in men's basketball for African Americans ever. Ever. So my kids all finished the term. I don't know where they got this. They don't go to school. They don't. That's all. Look, it's kind of like fake news. If you say it enough, it becomes what's real. I mean, it's It's not real. My kids have lifetime scholarships.
I don't think he's ever mentioned that before. But, but then, I mean, it kind of is a classic Calipari comment. He actually, you know, gives some credit to the NCAA, but then takes a shot at the most public guy to do it was Adam Silver, saying that, you know, these one-and-done guys don't go to class after they finish the one semester. And he's been beating that drum anytime they've put a phone or microphone in front of him, that he wants to make that very clear. But I do think the fact that the NCAA raising standards, apparently, and I mean, I'm just going off what Calipari said, helped everybody. The increased standards for getting into school made everybody take it more seriously, and now they're doing better than ever, which I don't know if that was the intent or what the intent was, but the outcome was great.
Yeah, and was it he or another coach who said that parents are making sure their kids do this and do that in the classroom? And if that is indeed the case, then that is a direct result of that, which is fabulous. Because it used to be they didn't think they had to worry about that. They turn them loose. You know, here's my kid. You know, make sure he gets a scholarship.
And I think that is, you know, we give the NCAA such a hard time. They do a pretty good job of laying out exactly what you need to do, because I follow them on Twitter, and sporadically they'll send out, you know, if you want to be a student athlete, you have to be doing this right now. If you're new, so
a reminder.
Yeah, so they're doing a lot better, and that hasn't helped. Apparently, from the numbers that Calipari was giving, has helped with graduation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I always point out, you know, it's all about the membership, but that what Curtis just described, that is done by the people up in that big building up in Indianapolis. Those tweets and things like that. And that's vital. There's no question about it. And what better way to reach today's kids? Throw it out there on social media. Doesn't matter how old the person who put it out there is. What matters are the eyeballs. Back in just a minute here on 630 WLAP. Isn't that beautiful? You got on a couple of minutes before I did. We're talking about the SEC teleconference. And this is what serenaded us.
This is the hold music.
Elevator music, if you will. It was upbeat, uplifting, isn't it?
And I was telling you I was going to try to find out who this was. And I was going to Shazam it, which is the app you can download on your phone, which identifies the song being played. And Shazam had no idea. So if you have any idea who this is, it's got to be like Beethoven or Bach or one of those guys,
I think,
right?
It had to be commissioned for the Southeastern Conference.
You think
summer teleconference call.
We need to create an orchestra of former coaches, like have Steve Spurrier on the cello.
we've got to figure out what would be the perfect instrument. Wouldn't Spurrier be the tuba, though?
Well, yeah, because he's full of hot air, he has to be on one of those.
But that's not really a concert. I guess it can be. I'll have to check with my my niece on that. She's a music expert.
We'll figure it out. But, just a little class.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that – I don't know if that's an SEC thing or the company they use.
Probably a little of both. Speaking of the SEC, it is an all-SEC final in the College World Series. Florida LSU just underway. And there is no score. It is the best out of three out in Omaha. And, you know, it seemed like a tough task for Kentucky to get there because they were playing at Louisville, which is, you know, I mean, it's not that far from home, but it's on the road against a really good team with really good pitchers. But when you get right down to it, Kentucky was two wins away from Omaha. I don't think anybody expected to see, well, I guess it's not that big of a stretch. Florida's the 3 seed, LSU the 4, but everybody thought Oregon State would be in that championship round. Going in, the Beavers had lost 4 games. LSU knocked them out. Kentucky took 2 out of 3 from LSU right here in Lexington in the regular season. Now, the Florida series didn't go quite as well. Wildcats lost 2 out of 3, won the first game, and actually literally played for an SEC title, a share, on Sunday, and did not win, of course. But then LSU really spanked the Wildcats in the SEC tournament. So that's when Kentucky wobbled a little bit, then steadied itself, and won the regional championship. So watching these teams reminds you of just how close the Wildcats, how good they were this year. pretty incredible. When we come back, Mark Simmendinger, and we will ask him about the marriage of auto racing, auto sports, and college basketball. They made it work at Missouri. Can they do it in Kentucky? We're back in a minute. 630 WLAP.
Yeah, it's a jumping little record I want my jockey to play. Roll over Beethoven, I gotta hear it again today.
Race is on and here comes pride in the backstretch. Heartache going to the inside. My tears are holding back there, I'm trying not to fall. My heart's out of the running.
They will be racing soon at the Kentucky Speedway. Well, they're working up there, but racing is for real coming up. The first weekend in July, the Quaker State 400 comes up on Saturday, July the 8th, and that, of course, caps off a great weekend of racing, and here to tell us about it is our old friend Mark Simmendinger. He's been on the show many times. Mark, how are you, sir?
Dick, I'm doing great.
We want to ask you a very important question before we start talking about what's going on up at your place. I don't know if you heard about the young man who decided to take a car and take a spin on the basketball court. I think it was the practice court, Norm Stewart Court, at the University of Missouri. Actually left skid marks on the basketball court, successfully wedding the two sports, basketball and, well, we called it auto racing. Probably not your level of auto racing. Are there any marketing possibilities here that you see? Because nobody markets themselves better than your sport.
I don't know. I think Coach Cal markets himself better than our sport. But, you know, Coach Cal has been a big supporter of ours ever since he's come into town. And, in fact, it was last year that he created a jersey for Tony Stewart.
Oh, that's right.
And it was a custom jersey, a game jersey.
Yeah.
I mean, it was an authentic game caliber jersey, 14, with the Smoke name on the back.
Yep.
And we had Coach Hall and Goose Givens and Kyle Macy all gave it to him up on stage, and then Tony got a big kick out of it. And so, you know, a couple of years ago, Coach Cal was all set to drive the pace car, and we got rained out that night, unfortunately. But he did a lot of that stuff for us, too. So we would never deface anything related to Kentucky basketball. So that will never happen under my watch.
See, Curtis and I,
a different GM to do that. That's not happening.
We had this glorious image in our minds of a NASCAR vehicle scooting across the Rupp Arena floor. I'm not sure how it would get on and off, but we were gonna...
Well, I mean, Tubby Smith had that motorcycle at Texas Tech for their Madness
and
event.
Patino had a motorcycle for Madness 1 year.
It's only two more wheels.
If they want it and they call me, you know, Chris Woollard knows how to get a hold of me.
Well, that's true.
So if whatever they want, I'll figure out how to get. Something tells me they don't want it, but if they do, I'll get one.
Well, you may get a phone call from someone claiming to be Chris Woollard, the ops director. It could be Curtis. But all right, well, let's bring it back closer to home now. And you got a huge weekend coming up. I've got a couple questions about the Quaker State, but I'll hold that until you can tell us and remind us that there's more than one good race that weekend, is there not?
Yeah, there really is, Dick. And, you know, it all starts out, buckle up in your truck 225, the truck series race. The neat thing about that is we've got Kentucky's own Ben Rhodes in there, and he's running very well this year. You know, Ben's from Louisville. And, you know, what a lot of fans don't realize, last year he was driving in the truck series, but his truck burned up.
What?
In Thor Motorsports had a big fire up at their plant.
Wow.
And he had a brand new truck all set to go. They were pointing towards Kentucky with it. And his best truck, so his best equipment was gone for the rest of the year.
Mm.
And, you know, so that hurt him, but he's doing really well this year. And he'll face Kyle Busch. You know, Kyle made an announcement here recently that he's going to run all three of our races.
Wow.
So the Kyle Busch haters and lovers come on out for Thursday night for the truck race. A lot of people love that truck race because of, you know, it's only 225 miles.
Right.
And so they don't really hang back much. They just go for it the opening green flag all the way, and it's really some great racing. And then Friday night, we've got the Xfinity race, the ALSCO 300. As I said, Kyle's in the field. I believe Logano's in the field. I know that Ryan Blaney, Kevin Harvick. So we've got some
big
really
names.
Good cup drivers down there. And then we've got the Xfinity regulars, and William Byron, who won our truck race last year, just won this year, this week up in Iowa. He's a very, very good driver. You know, now signed for Hendrick. He's kind of Hendrick's next up-and-comer. So that's always a good race on Friday night. And then the big race is the Quaker State 400 presented by Advance Auto Parts on Saturday night. And just a lot of storylines on that one.
Let me back you up to the truck race and really looking at all three. When a driver announces he's going, and especially a driver of that kind of stature, announces he's going to drive all three, what ordinarily, and is there a blanket or a typical reaction from the team owner? Because I sometimes wonder what a team owner would be thinking, man, I wish you'd save your strength for the big race on Saturday.
Yeah, you know, Kyle was just here in town. In fact, he was helping us, advance the race.
Right.
And he was at the horse park. I asked him that question. I said, are there limitations on you? Because he does not drive for the same owner in Cup that he does in truck and Xfinity.
Okay.
So, in other words, he owns his own truck team himself.
Right.
And now I believe Xfinity, I think he is driving for Gibbs, I believe, and then obviously Gibbs for Cup. But he said there's no restrictions. He can do whatever he wants. I said, is there restrictions in your Cup contract? And he said no. He can do what he wants. That would be a question for Joe Gibbs, how he really feels about it.
Yeah.
I think there's two schools of thought. You know, Kyle Busch, I believe, is the winningest driver in the history of NASCAR sanctioned events. If you add up all three series, that might not be true. Maybe
he's
Richard
gotta be
Petty's
close.
Still ahead of
he's
him.
He's got to be close.
But he's closing in on it. Let's just put it that way. He may not be number one, but he's in the top two or three all time. And that's, I think there would be an argument that when you get used to winning, that's a good thing.
Well, I was going to say.
He didn't do that great. Remember when he got hurt, Dick, down in Florida, down in Daytona?
I do, yes.
He was coming back from that leg injury, and, you know, he didn't. All he did was focus on Cup. So I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know the answer, but anyway, he's back doing them. So
I've got to think
not care too much.
You, on the one hand, obviously, you know, like I said, save your strength. On the other, you get a really good feel for that track. Now, you're driving different vehicles, but you get to know that track intimately, don't you?
Yeah, and there's a guy, Kyle Busch, who's won the most races in the history since we built the track.
Yeah.
He's won the most, and he was reminding me, it goes all the way back. He won an ARCA race when he was 17 years old.
Wow.
And he hasn't slowed down since. So
literally.
He'll be fun to watch, and I think the other one that's going to be really interesting is how Earnhardt does when he gets here.
Yeah. What do you think?
Well, I mean, if you look at how he's raced so far this year, he hasn't really given us a whole lot of reason to be optimistic.
Yeah.
He hasn't run very well. He just ran well at a road course up in Sonoma, but I don't know how that's going to translate. Doesn't really translate to our track. So I'm hoping for the best. He's had some weird things happen to him. There's no real reason why he shouldn't be competitive, and it's only a few years ago he had the pole here, and he's had a couple top five finishes. And, there's really no reason why he shouldn't be very competitive, but he's had a variety of reasons why he hasn't done all that well this year. So I don't know. I mean, I'm hoping for the best. I think it would be an incredible story if he ran up front.
Oh, heck yeah.
Could you imagine his last race ever in Kentucky?
That'd be awesome. Well, let me ask you this, Mark. Obviously, the name was huge, and his dad was you either loved him or you hated him, but you sure respected him, and he was great for the sport. So he had such a Junior had such a head start in that sport. But as you well know, getting through that door is one thing, and staying there is another. And he didn't win a crazy amount of races, but he remained popular. Why do you believe that is?
Well, you know, I think the reason is because of his, you see it now in his Twitter deal. You know, he just kind of didn't get involved in Twitter, and then all of a sudden he got involved in Twitter, and all of a sudden he's like the most popular Twitter follow in all of NASCAR, not just because of Dale Jr., but his authenticity. The guy is an extremely authentic person, and that comes through. You know, he doesn't pretend to be something that he's not, and, you know, so I think that's what fans really identify with. You know, that's what I hear all the time when I talk about Dale Jr.
Really?
They say, you know, Dale Jr.'s a real guy. They feel like they know him. He's very similar to, you know, just your average everyday guy.
Right.
He likes to do the things that they like to do. You know, when Junior has a good day, he has a beer party. You know?
Yeah.
He likes to go hunting and fishing with his friends.
Yeah.
He'd just as soon hang out with his friends than anything else. You know, I mean, he doesn't really love a lot of the, you know, the trappings that go along with celebrity. That's not his deal. You know, he really enjoys just hanging out with his friends. And you know, the other thing about Dale Earnhardt Jr., he's done a lot of stuff for our sport. He's carried a lot of the burden for our sport, not only on the sports pages, but, you know, really off the sports pages. You know, we used to have Gordon, arguably Tony Stewart, Earnhardt, and arguably Danica Patrick as probably the four people that didn't really follow car racing still kind of knew who they were.
That's right.
And as Gordon retires, Tony retires, and, you know, Tony, even before he retired, was kind of stepping back because of injury and stuff. You know, a lot of that just fell on Dale's shoulders, and it's a really big burden. And that's, to me, that's going to be the interesting thing to see who steps up in that regard, because from a driving standpoint, we've never had as much talent as on this racetrack now. I mean, these young drivers now are just great, fun to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, Ryan Blaney and Kyle Larson, Chase Elliott, you know, the Dillon brothers, Ricky Stenhouse, you know, all these drivers. I mean, they are already here. It's not like we're waiting for them to step up. They've already stepped up. They're already winning races. They're running up front. But it's the question of who's going to be the face of NASCAR and who's going to step up and you know, be the one that everybody knows who they are and you know, really kind of translates to the casual fan. That's what remains to be seen, and that'd probably just be a function of who ends up winning championship.
Yeah, well, that's obviously the first step. To that end, let's talk a little bit about how folks can watch these races, and you got some pretty good ticket deals.
We got great ticket deals. You know, this is the first year of the kids ticket program,
right?
And NASCAR across the entire platform of all the races at all the locations. Kids are free at the Xfinity and truck race. So the Thursday night, Friday night, if you want to come out, you can bring your kids, all of them. If they're 12 or under, they're free.
How about that?
Now on Cup Day, it's $10.
That's a pretty good deal.
That means you could bring your kids for a weekend pass. You could have a weekend pass yourself, bring your kids, and it's $10 for the weekend for your kids, three races. I mean, you know, that's a great deal. The other thing that I'm really excited about is Richard Petty's 80th birthday celebration.
Oh, wow.
That is sponsored by Alsco, who's our sponsor of our Xfinity Series race. And they've been long-term sponsors of Richard Petty. Petty turns 80 years old on July the 2nd.
No kidding.
So we're having a big party for him that fans can still purchase their way into. There's a big hospitality tent. And not only do you get to see Richard Petty, Petty will make it. He's making an appearance. Kyle's going to be in there, all that stuff. But we're also going to have drivers are going to be going into the tent, and they'll be talking about what Richard Petty has meant to the sport, what it's meant to them, how it's affected their career. So it's going to be one of the most special things we've ever done for fans. And I really encourage fans, go to KentuckySpeedway.com and sign up for that package, because you'll thank me as you see me walking around the concourse. You can thank me, because you're really gonna love it. Well, it's really going to be great.
Any chance to see him? And I've always told a story about the very first NASCAR driver I ever interviewed was Earnhardt Sr. And so I thought, you know, I'll just root for that guy. He seemed like a pretty good guy. I had no idea about his backstory. And when we and then we interviewed a couple other drivers, and my shooter and I walk out of the garage area, and we literally bumped into Richard Petty. Just sauntering along, and I interviewed him. Couldn't have been nicer. And just a great ambassador for the sport, as you know. And it was really funny because it was right before the first Brickyard. And I said, you know, something to him about how popular the sport had become, and he just chuckled. He said, look, we've always been popular. Madison Avenue found us. And he was absolutely right. Absolutely right.
Yeah, well, you know, when Jerry Carroll owned the racetrack, owned the Speedway, we took Richard to the Kentucky Derby one year.
Did you really?
Yeah, and he is so recognizable. You talk about somebody who crosses over to the casual fan.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he was one of the most popular people, celebrities I have ever seen at the Kentucky Derby.
I'll bet.
Everybody wanted their picture made with him and his autograph. And, you know, and as you say, he's a very personable guy. There's a guy who really does enjoys being with the people.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
He really does. Kind of reminds me a little bit of the way Arnold Palmer was for golf.
That's a good call.
Same kind of deal.
Yeah, that's a good call right there. Hey, Mark, thank you so much for your time, as always. It is going to be a great weekend, starting with the truck race, the NCWTS Buckle Up in Your Truck 225, then it's the NASCAR Xfinity Series Allsco 300, and the Quaker State 400. It all begins Thursday, July 6th. KentuckySpeedway.com is where you can find out more information and buy tickets. And I wish you good weather, my friend.
Well, thanks, Dick. Great talking with you.
All right. Have fun.
See ya.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Mark Simmendinger of the Kentucky Speedway. And again, if you got burned the very first time, they've worked out the traffic. They've worked out the parking. It's a big event. And there will be a lot of people there, but it just won't be like it was on that Friday. I know some people who say, I'll never go back. Give it a try. Trust me, it is. And I will say this with a little bit of pride. One of the reasons is now, you know who's taking care of the traffic flow? The Kentucky State Police. There you have it. We'll come back and wrap things up in just a minute. Here on the Big Blue Insider, 630 WLAP. Thanks again to Mark Simmendinger for joining us. Thanks to Kyle Tucker as well. Briefly, we're going to rebook Kyle this week. We just had obviously a bad connection with him, so we will reestablish with Mr. Tucker, not related to Tanya. You had something else you needed to share with the class.
We were talking earlier about an SEC coach orchestra. Caller off the air said if Steve Spurrier was in that orchestra, he would quit halfway through the performance. And I would like to add, I'm wondering, would Les Miles be drug off the stage by someone and replaced by Ed Orgeron midway through the performance as well?
Well, then what would Ed Orgeron play? Something aggressive.
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
A kettle drum, boom, 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 you know.
Something
not
like
yet,
that.
Not yet, coach, not yet, Ed. We'll figure that out. We're going to have some fun with that. All right, well, we will have some fun with some fantastic facts. You're familiar with the plot to assassinate Hitler, right? Tom Cruise played the German officer in the movie. One of the worst cast parts ever. I think it was called Valkyrie or something like that, the plot. There were actually more than 20 documented assassination attempts, mostly from people who worked under him. How bad must they have been at their jobs? More than 20 bites of the apple, and they never did get the guy.
Well, you know, my favorite one, and I heard it on the History Channel, it wasn't a plot to kill Hitler, and it actually, apparently they did it. They were injecting him with estrogen.
I read about that.
Yeah.
And the other thing, too, is his doctor, unbeknownst to Hitler, got him hooked on opioids.
Yeah.
How topical is that right now?
Yeah.
And actually, Hitler actually fired him. You got me hooked on drugs. Guess who turns 31 this summer? Not Curtis. Guess who? SpongeBob.
What?
SpongeBob. 31 years old. He's just a little bit older than you are, isn't he?
Harry Potter books turned 20 today, apparently.
How about that? What was your favorite?
If book-wise, I guess the first one, because that's the only one I read.
You're one ahead of me. I did like the movies, I will say that. 90% of all species that have become extinct have been birds. I guess the pigeons ate them all. You don't have a cat, do you? I think I've asked you that before.
No.
Cats do not necessarily have a preference for their owners over strangers. So you have not imagined that. For Curtis, Dick Gabriel, that's it. Good night from Lexington.
Where do we go in? Yeah, you guys go. Hello.